welcome back to the new Earl Ingram Show, 540 AM WAUK and 101 FM, the show. You can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number on the line, Professor Bob Harvey, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina. You know, Professor Harvey, it's kind of strange, to say the least, that in 2022, we're looking at Cold War kinds of things that many of us probably have thought weren't going to ever be coming back. But right now, the standoff with Russia and Ukraine and NATO, you know, I mean, you know, you just, we've heard the term NATO, but clearly, over the last, I don't know how many years, that seemed like just an old bygone days kind of thing. But it is right at the forefront. And how close are we? Is this much ado about nothing, or where are we, Professor Harvey?
No, it's for real. I mean, you know, NATO was pretty much created in 1949 during the Truman administration. And it was all part of a containment policy. And the Roosevelt was concerned about this. This was what was a large part of his brainchild, because, and he died, of course, in April of 45, just before the war finally ended. But his vision was to create a United Nations and also to create a mutual alliance among the Allies to make sure that what happened that led to World War II, they had to put a stop to dictatorships by intervening. Remember, one of the greatest failures of American foreign policy occurred at the close of World War I, when Woodrow Wilson came in and proposed a League of Nations, and he brought his proposal back to the United States. And the United States, for a lot of different reasons, led by the Republicans, shot his proposal down. Thus, the United States didn't join the League of Nations. And there are many historians who believe that if the United States had joined the League of Nations and been willing to put troops to France and other places, that World War II and Hitler would not have been emboldened to do what he did. All right? And you remember the scenario of Hitler. I mean, he started off by taking the Alsace-Lorraine in 37. He went on into Austria because Austria was his birthplace, so he was able to gain there peacefully. Then, of course, he went into Czechoslovakia, and he laid claim to that in 38. And then that emboldened him. Nobody did anything about it. Chamberlain and the rest of them didn't do a damn thing about it. They let it happen. And then, in 1939, and I was just listening today to some of the more current things where Putin and the Russians are claiming that five saboteurs from the Ukraine tried to go in and do some sabotaging in Russian territory, and they were killed, trying to set up a provocative thing to invade. And that was predicted a few days ago by NATO supreme commanders that Russia was going to start sending out disinformation. Well, that's what Hitler did in 39 when he invaded Poland. He claimed that some Polish people had tried to go in and sabotage, you know, the Germans, you know, across their territory. And as the end results, Germany invaded Poland in September of 39. And the English and the French had formed an alliance with Poland to come with mutual aid and support, but they couldn't get to them, and they had no means of doing it. And so it was just a words and written on paper, but no action took place. And if that tells us anything, the United States, England, and France, who are all part of NATO, right now there are 30 countries that are part of NATO, if they learn anything, they are going to have to, in order to back down a bully, you've got to be able to commit troops. Now, we got them in Germany. We got probably about 25 or 30,000, you know, troops there, you know, that have been there since the Cold War, and actually since World War II. And just like we have in Korea, we have got to, and I know we're tired. We've been fighting this 14-year war in Afghanistan and 10-year war in Iran, and I know we're tired, but we have got to commit troops to that area, if nothing more than to send them into Poland. And of course, Ukraine is not a NATO ally. It is not a member of NATO. But they are an alliance that is showing overtures towards joining NATO.
So, Professor Harvey, you prefaced your thoughts with, you know that the American people are tired, and troops represent ground war. And mm-hmm. and you know, I don't know.
Not if, always, Earl. Not always.
Okay.
The fact that we were able to keep about 30,000 to 35,000 stationed in Germany, and probably an additional 20,000 to between 30,000 and 40,000 stationed in Italy, Greece, Turkey, air bases all over the place.
Yeah, but I'm in this instance with what is on the precipice, if Russia and Ukraine kind of get mixed up, you know, and war breaks out, ground troops are going to represent, you know, what the American people don't want to see. And,
right.
But that's the only way that they'll be able to be, to prevent Russia from, you know, claiming Ukraine is through ground war.
But see, here's the catch. Just like, you know, we had to stop a bully in the 2020 election. You have to stop a bully with forces. You can't sit there and play around and be nice. You have to go in and punch him right in the mouth. And I'm telling you, the United States, keep in mind that the United States has always pushed themselves, you know, prior to World War II and the early part of the 19th century. In fact, prior to World War I, remember, we didn't go to war in World War I until 1917. The war ended in 1918. They had been fighting for 3 years before the United States got involved because we were isolationists. But see, Earl, it's just like something you mentioned early in the show. We got our tentacles all over the world. There's a reason why we got at least 10 carrier battle groups out there right now, and not to mention some of the other battle groups, the amphibious battle groups or whatever, but we got 10 out there. The United
right.
States has 10 of them out there, 10 aircraft carriers with over 9,200 planes on them, and, you know, four or five surface ships and probably a couple of attack submarines escorting them. And then we got the missile boats. The United States has 18 in its arsenal, and probably at least 10 of them are at sea all the time, located all over the world to launch, you know, anywhere from 24 up to 32 those nuclear weapons that can independently target and wipe out anything. You got a fleet of 20.
So Professor Harvey, then explain to the American people why a nation that only makes up 4% of the global population has all that armament.
Because of the fact, Earl, the United States has its tentacles all over the world.
Yep.
Where do you think all those jobs went? They went overseas, and
right.
somehow the goods from those countries have to be shipped to the United States, where the greatest economy in the world is. The United States still has the greatest economy. It is only 4%, but it damn near controls 35% of the world's wealth. Even though we talk bad about the dollar is still the main currency that everybody wants to get their hands on. And just take a look at a global map. I encourage anyone to go on a computer or anywhere else, or go to the globe, take their children's little globe, or get their map hanging on the wall somewhere. Take a look at it. I'm looking at a map right now, and just looking at the Arab Peninsula, where you have, you know, the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. And then just go across the Atlantic and go down there at the tip of Mexico and the Latin American, the Central American countries, and take a look at the Panama Canal. You know who controls those major outlets? The United States of America. There are carrier battle groups stationed at every one of them. There's one in the Mediterranean, There's another one in the Indian Ocean or the Arabian Sea, cornering the Suez Canal. All of your transportation of exports, 90% of the exports in the world go by sea. Those carrier battle groups out there to make sure that those lanes stay open. Then you've got another major artery coming out of Southeast Asia. You got a carrier battle group that's always stationed there. You know, so, and then, of course, you got another one that's stationed down at the bottom of the Pacific, down there where Australia and New Zealand are. You got another one that's stationed off the coast of off the Baltic Sea area where, you know, an American carrier battle group is there because you got to protect the interests of England and France. So we have them all over. And then you've got one on the West Coast. So those ships are those multi-million-dollar ships. And now they got a whole new generation to replace the Nimitz-class carriers. There were 10 Nimitz-class carriers. Now they're getting ready to build over the next 50 years another 9 to 10 of the Gerald Ford class.
So Professor Harvey, we've got to go to a break, but, man, you know, what you are saying is we are never going to see a reduction in the investment in military armament. Our budgets are never going to decrease, whether or not
historically, we replaced Great Britain as the greatest naval power in the world. Great Britain once held that mantle. And her son, who's on steroids, and that's the United States, took over that role in the middle of World War II. By 1943, the United States took over after they destroyed the Japanese at Midway and a few other and Guadalcanal. After 43, Great Britain and Japan took a second-rate role to the United States, and the United States become the premier maritime power in the world. It is the greatest maritime power in world history. A lot of people look at us as a great industrial power. True, that is true. It's also a great economic power. But its greatest attribute is that it is the greatest maritime power in the world.
Professor Harvey, hold that thought. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Professor Bob Harvey's on the line. We'll be right back.